Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Okay, and we're live and we're back. This is Legends of Tabletop. We're doing a new sequence for this recording. We're not playing a game, we're not doing an interview, and we're not doing a live video on YouTube, so you're shit out of luck. What we are doing instead, and you'll be listening to this much later on the podcast, is just doing a roundtable, shooting the shit, some of the players of the D&D 5e session. On my left, I have Daniel Mulhern.
Hello, everybody.
And across from me, I have James Carlson.
Good evening. If it's evening.
It is evening. It is.
Well, if it is evening when you listen.
That is true. Right now, it's 8:15 Eastern time. Yes. We got some nice ambiance. You can't see that. You should be here to see it, but you're not. But we got the candles going. It's nice and cool outside. In fact, I think we'll open up the window so we get some cool air coming through here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful night.
It is a beautiful night. The moon is rising, nice and ghostly.
Harvest.
Yeah.
Is it a harvest moon?
It certainly is.
It's a harvest moon. Okay, how about that? We're doing a D&D podcast on the harvest moon.
Right, okay. Ladies and gentlemen.
All right, so I'm your host, Vince LaRosa, one of the legends of Tabletop. John will not be joining us.
One of the titular legends.
Titular is a good word. He's being a bitch and playing Battletech with his brother out, and he's located out in Swarita, Arizona, so there's a huge time difference and geographic difference as well. Yeah. So I'm going to turn this over to Daniel Mulhern here, and he's going to describe a little bit about his idea for this new podcast.
Okay, originally, just kind of spitballing ideas for podcasts and things that we might want to do. And one of the things that I thought I would be interested in, and I hadn't seen much of, is a podcast talking about DMing and specifically designing encounters. And it could go definitely more broad than that, and I think that's what we're going to do. But that was the initial idea, is like what kind of planning or not planning goes into encounters, and what makes a successful encounter, and how can you make it interesting, or you know, provide opportunities for it to go in directions that you would never predict. And that was kind of the genesis of this, I think. So
gotcha. So basically what you just said last was the DM hurting the players along the storyline, but keeping it loose in case they want to go off on tangents a little bit.
Yeah. Talking more even like specifically about how do you set up a fight for the characters to
you're talking about actual encounter building. You're saying, this is the story here, and then they stop and they meet this group of people.
Yeah.
And they may or may not fight. And yes. They do hear the stats, here's what's going to happen.
Right, here's exactly. The scenario. So not the overarching campaign or adventure, but so you have these like scenarios and set pieces that you want to use. How do you, that's another thing, if you have like a really cool idea for a set piece, a big showdown, how do you incorporate it in the game but make it feel organic in case your characters are just, you know, off in their sandbox murdering innocent civilians and stuff.
Which is always fun.
Yeah. Murder hoboing.
Exactly, yes.
Well, that's good. That those are good topics for discussion, but let's back it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And let's talk about how you got into role-playing. I mean, what's your genesis?
Well, I started in, I think, 7th grade, which was in the mid-90s. Mm. I actually started playing Magic the Gathering first, which had just come out. And I had always heard about Dungeons & Dragons. I didn't really know what it was about, but I knew they had really cool dice, and I was all about that. So when I found a group of friends who played Magic with, kind of cross-pollinated with another group of kids who played Dungeons & Dragons, I immediately gravitated towards that. Bought all the cool stuff, did the overnight sessions, and didn't really know what I was doing, but had a blast. And then I didn't really play for a couple years after that until high school. I met a group of friends, and we did a lot of this would be in the D&D 3.5 days, and we did lots of broken characters and seeing how we could destroy the game. and from the Inside Out. Yeah, we played Munchkin campaigns and had fun with that. And,
I've never played a Munchkin campaign before. Did you like that?
It really depends. It usually burns itself out as soon as you get bored with the character.
It becomes a problem of scaling.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's well, the way that we did
when you get Thor's hammer, it's tough. you get tougher to beat. So
that's
a DM faux pas.
Yeah, it's like players versus the game engine. Like, how can we make it so that our characters cannot possibly be defeated by anything in the Monsters Manual? Like, how can we make ourselves immune to everything and able to overcome any kind of defense and destroy anything? So that was more kind of like tactical character building, really, than much role playing. But
gotcha.
we did have some fun campaigns that had some role playing and stuff, though. But yeah, so that was, and then I really kind of that fell by the wayside until met you.
Yeah.
At work. 5 years ago. Yeah, and we started up the campaign in 4th edition.
And some camaraderie and brotherhood.
Yeah, yeah. So now we're out to 5th edition. So I've been from Advanced 2nd edition through finally up to 5th. So
you run the gamut.
Yeah, I missed the 1st edition red box and
you did
that now kind of stuff. That's
special,
time.
Magical. Yeah.
Yes.
You did miss out on that. What do you think, James? Think you missed out?
You totally
on
missed out.
Yeah.
Those are the halcyon days.
We can't run you back in time. Yeah. And how about you, James?
Now, I'm actually a 36-year man. My first toe dip was a blue box, actually, which I received from my aunt and uncle, but didn't play. That was in junior high. Didn't really start playing until I got my first advanced Dungeons & Dragons rulebook, which is 1st edition. First book, for some odd reason, was the Monster Manual, which I just thought had the most attractive cover. Then when I realized that was not had nothing to do with players, I asked for the Player's Handbook for Christmas, and it just went bananas from there. I met some friends in high school. Guy who sat next to me in Latin class, actually, 9th grade. And we got in a group, and I'm still playing with the guy, like, twice a year.
Oh, wow.
And so we've been playing ever since, and I've played every iteration and a bunch of other games just pretty steadily since then. So about 36 years of steady play.
No, you're still playing with this guy. Do you still have characters?
Not that long. Because we've been regenerating for every iteration, pretty much.
So okay.
We restarted for 2nd. We restarted for 3rd. 3.5, we amended. 4th, we started. We haven't started 5th yet, but we've got a little Pathfinder game going. So
nice.
Which is a close cousin to 3.5.
Gosh.
So that's me, in a nutshell. Yeah. Not really a DM. I've DM'd very sporadically.
That was actually
very
my next
briefly
question. Yeah,
I'm a hardcore player, not really a DM. Although I'm a player collector, so I collect systems, which I then assiduously do not DM. Which I guess it's not a consumable obsession. So at least I have physical objects still, and now I've graduated to PDFs, which I have more of than I do.
Yeah.
Safely shake a stick at, but that's me in a nutshell.
So, gotcha. So you're more the player.
Yes, but I've been in a lot of encounters, so I'll give my players 2 cents worth.
Well, that's definitely,
if we segue into that.
Definitely. Now, for myself, I got my start in 1983 with the Red Box. There was a store in the next town over, and if you're familiar with Morristown there, on Route 38 there, the Best. Remember Best's? The showroom.
Did not grow up around here.
Okay. No, you would not.
I'm a New York transplant.
New York transplant, okay.
Best was
got my teeth at Complete Strategist. Back when there were three of them in New York City. One in Montclair, New Jersey. So that's where I picked up my stuff.
On that. Yeah,
uh-huh. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
We'll there's one left. We'll live like 33rd Street.
No shit. Oh, wow. Maybe we should take a day trip and go up there.
There's one in Virginia, too. And there's still the one in King of Prussia.
There is?
Of course.
Oh, shit.
It's been
we
forever.
Have to go there. Wow. Yeah, we got to go there.
Pilgrimage.
This is the first time
we'll do it. What we'll have to do is set up a periscope.
Okay.
And just, you know, strap it to your tape.
Yeah, I'll get
iPhone
like a helmet.
To your forehead.
Yeah.
And then you can walk around.
That'll work. Yeah.
I think that'll work. But yeah, I was at Best. Our mom had driven my brother and I, and specifically for me to get the red box. I remember it being on an end cap. I remember how much it was at the time, but I had saved up my lawn mowing money. I had a small little lawn cutting business, and this was like magic to me. And at the time, we had just put the addition on the house, and I got my own bedroom. So I had this red box set. That's when the Dragonlance first novel had come out, too, around the same time. So here I'm reading my modules.
Autumn Twilight.
Exactly. Reading the red box set, cover to cover, and then reading the novel. And then being in
completely immersed.
Immersed. And then in my new bedroom with just my bed, my bureau, and this kerosene heater, kind of like setting the ambiance in the fall. It was just perfect. Maybe that's why I love autumn so much. But one of the reasons. And it was like magic to me. And then there on out, every day, especially in the summertime, our friends around the corner call it the around the corner. We'd go around and hang out in one of our friends' parents' carport outside. It's really weird how we wouldn't even be worried about the heat and humidity. We'd be sitting outside every day.
That's called wrapped.
Exactly. Playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, yeah.
And starting off on the red box set.
Excellent. Yeah.
And then getting the advanced Dungeons and Dragons. There was a in the Moorestown Mall, there was a bookstore called Bookend. Mm-hmm. And on an end cap, right where you did your checkout, they had all the modules, the Dragon magazines, all the handbooks. And even before I kind of knew what it was just like this mystical, amazing
had
thing.
Had this allure.
It had this allure. Yeah. Because my mom had introduced us to reading when we were younger. And she'd introduced me to The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So this was just amazing to me. My own little world I could get immersed in and, sort of have an identity growing up. And you go into the Bookend, and there was maybe one or two bays of science fiction. There weren't. And mm-hmm. Now there's just, half the store is fantasy, yeah. Science fiction, and horror. Then, no. You have
your one shelf or
you
two
had one,
shelves.
Two bay shelves of science fiction and fantasy, and then you were done. But then on this end cap.
And there was a huge business secondhand.
Yes. Yes.
That's where you get your books, really.
Exactly. And both James and I are straddling the analog and digital worlds, so we know what it was like before the internet, trying to get players, to combine, get yourself out there with the community. So many people, they read these books and no one's interested, or you couldn't get anyone interested in it. You couldn't really find a community out there to a pool of players and DMs to draw from.
Yeah.
When a bulletin board was an actual bulletin board.
Exactly. A physical
cork
piece,
board
exactly.
With tacks and index cards and tearaway chips. Exactly.
The hobby stores, mm-hmm. Allied Hobbies in the malls.
Yeah.
Players wanted. So that was definitely an interesting time. Now it's exploded. In fact, growing up, not that you would get beat up, but you were looked down on or ignored for playing those games.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're sort of looked down on and ignored if you don't play those games.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy reversal
flip.
Of
exactly,
fortune. But then that goes a lot with card players, how they said that the Magic players now make the best poker players.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that actually has a real world application for that. So.
Okay.
There's a healthy amount of crossover between the Magic and poker pros. Yeah,
really,
a lot of the same skill set.
So you've got these Las Vegas poker pros that are
that's where they got
their
start.
Resume. They've got Pokemon in there.
Yeah, definitely.
That's pretty amazing, really.
Yes, that's geeks cool. Have risen.
We have.
Yes.
And we've seen TSR fall apart, which that was interesting.
We have seen TSR fall apart. Yeah, we lived through that, yeah.
Which is a fascinating story.
Oh, I just finished Empire of Imagination.
Okay.
Yeah, that was eye-opening, and it was also bittersweet.
Yeah. I'm reading the digested versions on N-World. They do articles about that.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
It's a good place, good source.
Okay, so. I'll check that out. Yeah. I haven't been, although we... Our gaming group at the time in the 90s had planned to go to Gen Con 1991, and that was an anniversary Gen Con, I feel. We got the t-shirts, we got our tickets and whatnot, but we never actually got a chance to finalize them and get out there. We were going to do a road trip, and that all fell apart.
Have you ever been to a convention?
I have not, and it's gotten to the point where I've been to a PAX, Boston.
Oh, okay.
and the sheer amount of people, I can't take it.
Yeah.
I grew up in small little cons of like 100 to 500 people, and I prefer that.
Yeah,
now it's just this commercialized conglomerate that's just like, I really don't care. I can't. I mean, some people are like, oh, you should go once before, you know. I just don't give a shit. I don't care.
Yeah, it's kind of a different atmosphere because, you know, I'm kind of speaking from things that I've read and stuff, not my own direct experience, but, it was kind of back in the days, it was like kind of the weirdos and the outcasts who get together and they finally have a place where they can really, you know, come out of their shells and have this community. And
but in my experience, they should have stayed in their shells. Just in terms of their deportment, not who they were.
Yes.
I attended a PrinceCon and I attended a Council of Five Nations, which is up at Siena College in northern New York near Albany, both in the late 80s. And PrinceCon in particular, just the demeanor of the people was very haughty, and not just being Princetonians, but just they were not agreeable people. You know, they were shushers, and they kind of laid on every word of the DM, and they all knew the in-jokes. It was just not even pleasant. Scenario experience. So.
Yeah,
and there was no commercial aspect, so there was nothing.
Some Aryan fraternity.
Yeah, so there was nothing. As I said, they should have, they should have had a little control.
Gotcha.
Somebody with a bat, nearby.
Exactly.
Just there. You didn't do anything, but just to keep them calm.
Presence.
Exactly.
So it's something, you don't really hear that perspective of it being, cliques and kind of weird.
Well, there was something for the outcast, the outsider, the lone wolf to identify with and grab onto and enjoy.
And meet like-minded weirdos.
Exactly, yes. So.
And I saw Mazes and Monsters on TV.
Oh, nice.
Starring Tom Hanks.
Yeah. That's pretty much his career peaked right there.
Is that actually worth viewing?
It's hilarious. Oh, it's so funny.
I mean, what has he been up to since then? You haven't really seen him around.
It didn't seem to do much.
Yeah.
Kind of petered out.
Not like Peter Scolari. Now.
Right.
Be that as it may.
So, D&D is cool.
Yeah, so we gotta say, we got nothing. Yeah, D&D. So yeah, we're running a 5th edition campaign we just started. In fact, if you go onto the website, legendsandtabletop.com, and follow the links to our YouTube account, you'll be able to view that. We use some Dwarven Forge sewer tiles and some dungeon tiles attached, and that worked out fairly well. And our next session will most likely be sometime in mid to late October, depending upon schedule.
So that's something too, like using the sewer tiles. How did you find that as a DM using the tiles and thinking about how you want to set up the geography and stuff? How did you find that? Like, what was your?
Well, that was interesting because the actual physicality of the dungeon tiles played off of my imagination, and it kind of like worked in tandem with what I had going on in my mind, what I wanted to happen, to when I started building. That helped shape the actual adventure as well. And just to have that visual for myself was completely enjoyable.
Yeah, and the tactile even.
Exactly.
Experience.
Yeah.
And if I do say so, your methodology of constructing everything but covering things is vastly superior to some users of this paraphernalia who reconstruct things on-site, room by room, instead of drawing maps, which is infinitely longer.
I was wondering.
And grinds play to a halt.
What the logistics would be of something like that. It's
use a fog of war, as it were.
Yeah. So, yeah, we
worked out fine.
You had pre-built the sewer tile map, and then just on top of it, because it's got a kind of a flat surface on top, you laid a like a game board or a piece of cardboard on
another,
top of
another piece of poster board.
Poster
correct.
Board, right, yeah.
That's where we had the city streets.
Yeah.
And so, that's what I'll continue to do for subsequent adventures. I'll plan it all out. Because I don't like things grinding. Like you said, I don't like things grinding to a halt. It's like taking you out of the story. You got to sit there.
Yeah.
It becomes a glorified Lego session.
Correct.
Yeah. Look what I can build. I
mean, Lego logs. Yeah. Yes, that's true. Now, having said that, I know 5e seems to, on the surface, not lend itself well to minis, but I think it worked out well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that it doesn't lend itself, but it doesn't necessitate it.
True.
As so much as 4th edition certainly did.
4th edition, you couldn't do anything without it.
Yeah.
That's very true.
And, which I enjoyed that aspect of 4th edition, just the whole the combat aspect and the tactical nature of it. I thought that was cool. It was not, you know, separating it out from the other stuff that makes D&D, like just as a tactical combat game, I thought it was great. Build a character, have all these cool powers that interact with the, you know, your fellow party members and position yourselves and so
5 pages of cards.
You know. Oh yeah, yeah. It's almost like a Final Fantasy Tactics kind of game.
Exactly. Yeah. That was very similar to that. I just didn't like how your hard won purchases were obviated by constant rules that had to add, you know, updates and you didn't even crack a book before too long. And the fact that you had to pay to get your best your best possible character sheet. Really, that's true. You needed it. You needed a sheet with the cards to show what you were capable of.
They put that behind a paywall, and that's not the best way to do it. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviating your physical purchases and continuing to charge you was a bit dear. So.
Yeah, especially considering the business model they had built prior to that, which was, you know, you buy your books, and there you go.
Off you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
You do your thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could see that being a... I bought the 3 core rule books and then just bought a subscription. So I didn't invest too heavily in it. But, yeah.
I think I still have my subscription in December.
And as with all of my
you have core rule book settings,
yes, I had never cracked the Dungeon Master's Guide.
And you shouldn't. Don't learn their secrets.
So, yeah, like James, like James, I'm primarily a player. I've had some terrible experience DMing. I've since learned a lot of the don'ts of DMing, and I was doing all of them. So
you're a perfect example of what not to do.
Yeah,
but yeah. You're learning.
It's a lot of reading the Dungeons and Dragons Reddit and stuff and things people post. There's a lot of kind of shared wisdom and also groupthink, but. You learn a lot, and it's kind of rekindled my interest in trying to do that. You know,
The best thing to do is, I mean, obviously you watch My Genius. As
exactly. So I'm inspired. Yeah.
I know James like what?
That's what I'm saying.
I
don't
saying yes, right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. But yeah, you're playing John's game, and also to sit back and YouTube other DMs like Chris Perkins is a perfect example. Is to watch. Gameplay in play examples. I think one thing too is when you're behind the screen and you're standing up, you're sitting down, doesn't matter. You're on stage. You really are. Mm-hmm. All the focus is on you. And some people that can be intimidating. Like, what do I say? What do I do? People are staring at me. What do I, you know? What do they do this? I don't have that written down. Because essentially, for myself, when I craft an adventure, I have a general idea of what's going on. What I think you might do, I may make some notes. But for the most part, I will play my adventure off on what you guys do and follow that tangent as well. Like, I may say, the adventure goes this way, fundamentally.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys may be puzzling something out and say, oh, we figured it out. It's wrong, but I go with it. Because it still sounds good. You guys feel good about it.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
And it makes for a good story.
It makes for tone. Because so that might like, hey, that's better than what I came up with.
Yeah.
So I use that and then go off of that. So that's fine.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is, it's a good, I think it's a good way to do this is a combination of outlining, story beating it, like if you were doing a script.
Yeah, beat it out.
Beat it right out. Master beats.
It also goes along with saying yes.
Exactly. Trying to say yes as much as you can. Because I remember when I first started and not knowing the rules too well. You know what actually screwed me up with the rules? It was keeping time.
Okay.
Does this happen in real time? I have to wait a day? Or, you know.
I'm out of spells. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
10 seconds. We got to wait. Yes. We're done. That's when I was only like 12 years old. So, wait a minute, man.
thought you do remember counting segments and
yes.
determining yeah. where the blow landed during the preparation of the spell for yep. segments.
Wow.
Yep. It was just like, oh. The only thing, we didn't do weapons versus armor class, thank goodness.
Oh, that was
we would have been mired. But yeah. but we did the we did segment counts. We rolled initiative every round. We did a lot of
exactly.
We did a lot of lengthening stuff.
Yeah.
But to your credit, I played a long time ago in for a DM very briefly where we turned left instead of right, and the adventure was over. So, and subsequently, the campaign was over. So we're like, okay, so right was right, left was wrong, but you're done for the night because we turned left. Yes. Well, okay.
Yeah, okay.
So we're not the wind-up toy soldiers you were looking for. Sorry,
exactly.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You fulfill your role.
And it's, yeah, kind of like, if you can go with it.
Literally, not yeah. even kidding around, that happened.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What that also
the world doesn't exist over there. You dissipate into the ether.
You just float away.
Or you just come in on the other side of the map like Pac-Man. Yeah.
There you go. Oh, definitely.
But yeah, so apparently this guy he had something planned if he turned mm-hmm. right. And it never occurred to him that the players
that
don't
been
know
right.
and it doesn't matter ultimately which direction they choose. You put the encounter at the end of the path
you
the
just,
players
you,
go down.
Exactly. You just kind of like turn it around and let them
yeah,
go.
There's a point where planning can over planning.
He was over planned.
Can really screw you up.
Over planning will just give me a headache after a while.
He literally he had a 3-ring binder or stuff.
Oh my
and
god!
It all went went to waste because the campaign was over. So.
Magic blinder.
No one will ever know the genius of the twists and turns.
Only he and his convoluted mind.
I wonder if he still has it somewhere.
I don't know.
Or maybe he found some more skilled players.
Maybe somewhere on Paizo.
He's the one guy we don't talk to.
I don't know. I wonder why.
Yeah. It could be a connection.
It could be. Oh, and this episode is not officially brought to you by, but we are drinking Not Your Father's Root Beer.
Some of us are.
And one of us is living by the code, thank you very much.
Yes, he is living by the code of sobriety.
No, code red.
Code red.
Brought to you by Mountain Dew.
Oh, right. Oh,
live by the code,
that,
literally.
That is really a gamer.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. This is
Doritos and Mountain Dew.
And if we go long enough, I'll be switching to Voltage.
Nice. I remember, yeah, I think one of my favorite campaigns I ran was in 1991 when I got the Under Mountain box set, original box set. This is just like, I must have had a boner for a week straight. This is amazing. And I ran a campaign in that, my brother and our friends, for 5 years, exploring Under Mountain. Amazing campaign. That was fun. Yeah.
Which iteration was that? Second?
That was second. Right. That was first straight into second right. edition. Yeah. And second edition was very, very tame.
Second edition sold a lot of books.
It did.
A lot of red bound vinyl covered books. Handbooks, you might say. They knew how to sell books.
Oh, yeah. I had elves, warriors, and wizards. Because, yeah,
wizard,
or,
yeah.
Was a complete
remember
mage.
The magic encyclopedias, too?
Yeah, they were.
Yes. And they were great.
Oh, they were amazing.
I don't know why I had one, because I'm, again, a perennial player, but still. It was
it's
nice
cool.
to have.
It's a cool
my,
book. Yeah.
It's in my garage somewhere.
So. It had the bookmark, the ribbon bookmark,
mm-hmm.
and everything, and the fake leather. Yeah, each one was a
could have passed for a Bible in certain sense.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, true.
not to restart the argument.
You could walk around with your childhood, and, you know. You knew Latin. You had your Latin class. So there you go.
We never got out of... there's a story there. our school district didn't do Latin well. So,
no? Okay.
Didn't take the regents. Did not get... I met my lifelong DM. That was... Thank you, Latin.
That's what it was
thank
for,
you, Latin.
Exactly,
that's what
yeah,
it did.
So Latin will always be...
You are we are, because you've been in Latin class.
Together with D&D.
Ankthe uye enle.
And I think it probably expanded my vocabulary in time for the SATs. But
nice, yeah.
Other than that,
learning the roots of words is cool.
Yeah. Almost like a magic kind of thing, too. You know,
you really well, after Dragon Slayer, where
yeah,
they all the spells
exactly.
were in
yeah,
Latin,
yeah,
which was amazing.
You're living
so.
The dream, then.
Exactly.
There you go.
Never really fought any dragons, never conjured anything, so I don't know.
This class is bullshit,
man. I know, right? What the hell? Where's the demons?
I summoned Satan like 6 times.
Good thing I didn't burn myself and get tossed in a lake of fire. Nothing would have come of it.
That was actually a very good movie.
It's an amazing movie.
I just recently picked up the novelization and gave it to my nephew. He read it.
Like, I read that so
was it
long
great?
Ago.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
That's the one with Janusz.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yes. Why am I out there dripping with goo?
And it showed that he had the gift and it was stunted. That was what was interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So they deliberately stunted it in him because it was making puffballs and stuff.
Yeah.
He was making like tribbles and things.
Pretty much, yeah. It was very, very weak.
So at the end when he summoned the horse, that was perfect. Because if you read the novel, that made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're at 2001 and watch the movie, a lot more makes
sense. Oh, yeah. I haven't done that yet. It's like...
Which?
2001, like the novel is supposed to be a companion piece of the movie. I've seen the movie several times, but I've never read the novel, despite it being recommended several times.
Hey, Gary Mitchell's in it. It's really cool. Was that a throwaway for you people?
I think so.
Gary Mitchell. Where No Man Has Gone Before, Star Trek, one of Star Trek's pilots?
Probably, yeah.
He was played by Gary Lockwood. Played... not Pool, the other guy. The one who Hal succeeded in killing. In addition to the hibernator.
Oh, yeah. Was Dave.
You're hitting us with some Eldritch shit.
Sorry.
Like,
yeah.
That it was not my intention. but some people out there might appreciate it. So.
Yeah.
Oh, no. They
there's an audience for everything.
There really is, yeah.
Yeah.
There really is. our own podcast are proving it.
So... Going back to the party who turned left when they should have turned right, and the sewer tiles in the fog of war. Mm-hmm. What happens if during that campaign we just decide we're going to leave Neverwinter now and we're going to go out in the country?
Well, we're not Neverwinter, we're in Waterdeep.
We're in Waterdeep, yes, yeah.
It used to be Neverwinter.
Yes, yeah.
Zalabim was there.
Yeah, Zalabim
right.
was
you
there.
You guys don't worry, you'll go back. There's a little hint. You'll be going back. You'll be traversing the entire continent. Those are my plans for you guys.
Well,
but what was your question? I'm sorry.
So how do you, when you're dealing with a big physical setup for a set piece,
mm-hmm.
how do you deal with your party just going completely off the rails?
Okay. Well, intrinsic in a set piece, the party unconsciously knows, I got to be here.
This is true. Yeah.
So that's
that definitely was in my mind.
Yeah,
too,
that's number one.
Like, I want to see what's in there. Yeah,
and number two, pardon the scatological entendre, you're being in the sewers with all the crap.
True.
There are just things you can do to push characters in a certain direction. Like, maybe you wouldn't have checked that wall, the secret door, if I had not said, do you...
Right, yeah, you've got your clues.
You think you catch like a faint soupçon of a chant. You even think it's in your head, you're not sure. You're like, oh, I'm going to go check over there. Well, now you start seeing the outlines of light around this crack of the outline of a door. So now you know.
So it's kind of
that's kind of like you need to go the
breadcrumbs.
Direction.
But
if you just said, ah, you know what, fuck this, we're just going back up, I would play that out. You guys would go up, back up the ladder into the streets of Waterdeep. Maybe you'd go back into the Sunburned Frog, but something else would happen to draw you back in.
Mm.
Whether that's another attack by the dead rats, something weird in the inn itself, or even to the point where the watch comes in and says, "Okay, we just heard that you did the blah 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 blah. Could you help us out a little bit more and go back and take care of this?
Gotcha.
Because we heard about that.
Yeah,
you know, we'll give you." This amount of money. So there's a variety of ways you can bring people back to that point again.
Enforced poverty is one. That's a good one.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're broke.
Yeah.
This is the best you're going to do.
So if we'd gone to Owlbear Hooters, we would have been drawn back in.
Exactly, okay. Yes. Nice.
Or maybe you
wake up and your
sewers.
Pants are unbuttoned and you have no mattress.
You can't even shoot.
That's one.
That was a bad dungeon.
No. That's probably one of the worst things you could do to a player.
Take away
is they wake
toys.
Up and watch. They take away all their belongings and all their beloved magic items, especially they've adventured with them for a while and they've become accustomed to them and fighting with them.
Mm.
You've got your adventure set because they want to recover them.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Amazing thing to do.
Two cards did it. A4 did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, spoiler alert for Tomb of Horrors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't say what color devil picture. But... Oh, sorry.
It was a great adventure. That was a cool TPK waiting.
That's cool.
We ran it special. My DM, we ran it. He let me play a Nicodemon. So I just, we started out a Nicodemon. He just rampaged through it. Still, he destroyed a lot of it, but he probably got killed by the Juggernaut or something, or he decamped after he met the False Lich or something. He didn't go all the way. So, but it was fun. It was a nice romp.
So no way to handle the Tomb of Horrors as a typical PC.
No, I mean, party. Unless you read the damn thing and you're you're in player knowledge and character knowledge. That's a rough one. I don't know. I don't know many characters that made it all the way through.
Well, the first checkpoint D1 was bad, too. We lost a lot of people there.
Lost a lot of good men back there.
Don't quote that mouth.
Oh, my God.
Drowsy poison's a nasty thing in first edition.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Now, do you guys do a lot of D&D reading? You know, R.S. Salvatore and, Richard Lee Byers and two of the others.
I have read, and I haven't read anything in a long time. I'm illiterate. So
you're illiterate in the first place.
Yes, but one of my first books that got me into fantasy was the Homelands trilogy.
Oh, okay,
R.A. Salvatore. That was a great read, and really some fantastic world building, and. I tried a couple other D&D novels after that, but nothing really. Like some of the other Forgotten Realms novels, never really.
Remember the one I gave you? Wasn't horrible.
It was horrible. Yeah, it was the Archmage.
Well, that was nice of you. Thanks.
Yeah. Why did I can't get this. See what you can do with it.
Okay.
And who was it? Kemp.
Troy Denning.
Troy Denning. Well, I'm sorry, Troy. It was.
Yeah, I couldn't even like my brain.
fuck! I can't do this.
Yeah.
It's like trying to read Game of Thrones. Sorry, I can't.
Oh, Game of Thrones draws you right in.
Well, the movie, the series does. The live action series does. Did you read?
I read all of them. I read them back. That was the.
What is wrong with you?
Oh my god! I'm with the majority of people in the world. I guess.
Hell with you all.
Yes.
In terms of D&D books, I read the first Dragonlance trilogy. I read the Twins Dragonlance trilogy. Mm-hmm. I read the Drizzt prequel trilogy.
Right.
Though I never read the actual books or the subsequent books. That was pretty much it for D&D itself. But in terms of history, I got started with Burroughs, the Tarzan books when I was a kid.
Okay.
And then my father introduced me to Tolkien, and I absorbed that, including the Silmarillion. And subsequent, I've read... My friends got me into the Moorcocks the Vances, and I'm not that widely read, but I think I've read all the good essential stuff.
Okay.
But I don't seek it out. I'm not a book buyer.
Any Heinlein or Eddings or anything like that?
No, I read a couple of the Warhammer books. I read the Gotrek and Felixes. Read all the stuff they put out for dwarves.
They look pretty good. Are they good?
They are up to a point. Mm-hmm. I read about six of them and I'm done.
What about?
I don't read the 40,000s. I just read Warhammer stuff. I read the three books in the Dwarf trilogy. Those were good. Although Grudgebear was the best.
What is the name of the evil elf in Warhammer?
Malekith.
That's it. Yeah. How are those?
I couldn't tell you. I didn't read them. So, although one of them, the last Dwarven book, was a prequel in essence because it was the. It set up the War of the Dwarves and Elves. Mm. So Malekith was in it, like one of his functionaries was in it. It was a girl, she played a big role of setting the Dark Elves masquerading as the High Elves and ambushing the Dwarves and forcing them into the confrontation.
Yeah,
I've picked up some of the 40K lore from, falling down the wiki hole or the TV trope hole, whatever, occasionally on the internet, and... Some of it's just fantastic. It's just so creative and bizarre. It's a really interesting kind of...
That's an expensive hobby.
Huh? Oh, my God.
Yeah, remember the Warhammer stores?
Yes.
Yeah. You have stores.
It's crazy.
Yeah, Cherry Hill Mall had one.
There was one here, too.
There was one in Cherry Hill.
By a closed Gennardi's, not far from here.
Down here on 73?
Yeah. No. It was. I forget because I was probably wasn't living here. I was probably just visiting my wife here. But I went over there. It was definitely one of those because those Gennari's buildings are unmistakable. The empty ones. So, but I don't think it's open anymore.
Probably not.
Retrenching.
Yeah, right.
Or remember Wizards of the Coast stores.
Wizards of the Coast, yeah. Also in Morristown Mall.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know they had one there.
They had they had board games. They had, you know, stuffed animals for their card games. And in the back, they would have gaming stations, PC gaming stations. Yeah, but you get all your D&D stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's kind of cool. It didn't last as long as I would like it to.
Or extend it. That's what they did.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think retail is dead.
Well, it has its place. Brick and mortar, there'll always be a place for it in terms of game space. So.
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If your parents don't want you, and everybody's parents don't want them in their basement, then they'll have to find someplace to play.
Go out to your D&D encounters.
And card players will always need a place to play.
So. That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Social games. I don't
see that going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
How was your Mountain Dew there?
Delicious. Sorry, I'm a gulper.
No, go gulp away.
Okay.
No worries. That's what the D&D's about.
Yes.
Gulping and eating.
Caffeinating.
Definitely caffeinating. Yeah, we're not caffeinating. No. We're imbibing.
Yeah. Alcohol.
A little bit. That's not bad.
That's good.
You hear my...
Your tinkle.
The clinking. Not tinkling.
The tinkling. I think tinkle is a better word.
Well, that's if you have to go to the bathroom. Which I will be doing shortly. Yes.
Let's take a pause for station identification.
You're listening to Legends of Tabletop. Pause while I go to take a piss.
Brought to you by Sloan and and Scott Tissue.
Exactly. The quicker picker upper.
The Cottonelles, hopefully.
That's right. That's very soft on your ass.
Slickery.
You messing with my cigar cutter?
Yes. This is a very cool cigar cutter.
Well, when
stainless steel.
It is.
And, see if I just put my finger right in there. And then, oh, my God.
Oh, you shit.
Oh, I done it this time.
I really did it this time.
What did I see just today from Ray Donovan? It was a coffee mug, and the handle is a brass knuckle.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's hilarious.
Nice. There you go. It's your dwarven tankard. Speaking of that, I probably know this, but what is your favorite character to play?
Oh, tough. Class, race, which, what do you think?
Class and race, yeah, both of those together.
Tough. I like to play dwarves if I can, followed closely by halflings. Hmm. Although, I was thinking about this on the way over. Idiosyncratically, I kind of would lean towards elves in this edition.
Really?
Just because they don't pay the feat tax for using finesse weapons.
Okay.
So you can pretty much build a combatant on dex, which also doubles for your defense stat.
Oh, nice.
So I played more elves in this edition than ever before because of that.
Okay.
Because finesse is just baked into the rules.
Yeah, there's no feat. And you also get the damage add for the stat.
Right, yeah.
Which you don't get in, say, Pathfinder. That didn't translate. You still need a feat. So I played a bunch of elven clerics and druids just with 10 strengths and max dexes and wisdoms. And
wow.
Not bad, though. Okay. I mean, you know, as long as the saves don't go off the rails.
Exactly.
Because every stat's a save now.
Yeah.
It really is.
You can't really dump people. Don't dump out there
anymore.
Don't dump out there.
Okay. And you, Dan, what's your... you have a favorite, or are you, like, trying different things? Or?
And I like casters. Just goes.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, casters. Yeah, you're definitely a caster.
I would say right from the very beginning, I think the very first character I rolled up was a fighter mage. And I've always liked the combination of melee and spell casting. So that's usually what I gravitate towards. You know, in our fourth edition game, I played a druid, had the cool.
That was cool.
I like the shape shifting mechanic of fourth edition. It was very interesting.
You had
interesting.
A little mini to shape shift out.
Of. Yeah, and you got you got to get in there and maul people and then cast spells.
Mauling people is always good.
Yeah. In second edition, I played my longest running character was a dual class fighter. Psionicist.
Really? That's interesting.
That was fun.
Yeah, that worked out.
Second edition was good for that because it introduced Psionics as a class finally.
Yeah. That was fun. That was a really weird flavor of Psionics that they... It's a kind of
well,
a
they had it in first, yogi but it wasn't kind really of...
I actually rolled double zeros with an illusionist and I had Sonic Blast. It was
nice.
And I had Teleport. It was... And I... My DM very craftily... Killed me with a... No, it was perfect. He killed me with, what you call it? What's the name of the spell? Come on. Not weird, but the illusion that kills you.
Oh, I know you're talking about.
Not weird, but the single target one.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm blanking on the podcast.
Dude, I know. You're letting us down.
I know.
That's right.
It's terrible.
Is it in fifth edition? Have they...
Oh yeah, Phantasmal Killer.
That
so,
is true, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was caught. It was in downtime. We were already playing new characters, and he just wanted to. He was just playing cleanup, so he wanted to clean up the old characters. So he was methodically killing us off one by one. So my guy was caught unawares in his tower, an enemy illusionist who he'd given somebody's counterfeit currency to and gotten in his tower burned down. Cast Phantasmal Killer on him, and despite the fact that he teleported, since it was all in his mind, it just followed him. And he didn't save, and it killed him. So he couldn't escape it.
Yeah.
Nice. And it looked like him, so, because my DM...
Oh, he was killed by his clone.
He was killed by me, because my DM said I was my own worst enemy, and he was right, so...
That's pretty poetic. I like
it was
that.
Poetic. Yeah. It was a good poetic death, I have to say. So.
Yeah, that was worthy. Definitely.
Twice. But he was a scientist, first edition, naturally rolled 0-0, so. Just so you know.
Yeah.
Cool.
Crazy times.
Yeah. For myself, I haven't really played all that much on the conventions that I've gone to. I've played more as a player in Call of Cthulhu than I have Dungeons and Dragons. I've run Shadowrun games. I've run Star Frontiers again. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But not many. I mean, there's so much out there now.
Totally.
And not enough time.
Yeah.
To do it all.
Video so, games. All these games, these video games are going are free to play.
Exactly.
It's just like, there's not enough
it's
time.
It's Canadian Devil, I'm telling you.
I know, right?
Freemium.
Yeah.
So I planted my flag on Dungeons & Dragons.
D&D
fanatic.
Yeah.
I stick with medieval. If it's not medieval, Dungeons & Dragons, I'm at least in the wheelhouse. I played
sci-fi.
I played Gamora the Little, first edition. I played... Champions a little, Village of Vigilantes a little,
okay, I remember, yeah.
But maybe a little GURPS, mm-hmm. But never. I've always come back to medieval Renaissance. So
correct, that just seems... yeah. Same with myself. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah. How about yourself, Dan? Other than the card games?
Okay. So I played. I had a blast playing Vampire in the late 90s.
Oh, storytelling, alright.
That was a great system.
Roll those dice.
Yeah. Just a really really dice unique, pools, fun system. Yeah. Soaking damage and...
Yeah, same with Shatter on
all that
pools.
Stuff, yeah. So, despite not being all that into, like, vampire mythology or anything like that, it was a fun game. I also played a little bit of... the D20 Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
Which was great. That was probably
West End
one of the longest campaigns
yeah.
And longest running characters I've ever had was that. Just the opportunities for, you know, the kind of stuff that you can't do in a video game, like, you know, hijack a starship or
yeah.
Your own, you know, colony somewhere, you know, become a space pirate, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There are a lot of cool opportunities for kind of going off the rails in that universe, which is cool. But primarily it's been D&D. I've also played World of Warcraft for a while.
Okay.
I'm 3 years clean now, so.
I
also happen to have a 3-year-old, so I don't know if that's related or not.
Probably has a great deal to do with it.
Yeah.
Now that's interesting. Are you going to? What's your plan with your children? With role playing? Because a lot of fathers.
Oh, I'm indoctrinating them. Yes. Yeah.
I'm gonna pull them into the fold.
Though, yeah.
Yeah. That's worked very well for my brother.
That's great.
They love. They play.
I just worry, like, I won't be able to relate to my kids. Like, they're going to be into different things, like playing pure melee characters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just like, how do you even relate to someone like that?
Growing giant stuffed fuzzy dice. Yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Big 20-sider.
Yeah, I'm not, my nephew is, he's only 7, but he's just obsessed with all things fantasy. Yeah, and he's been chomping at the bit to play Dungeons and Dragons, so to kind of figure out kind of a kiddie version.
Well, if you want me to run a kiddie game, I will.
I don't know if I want you to run a kiddie game. Just kidding. No, that would be that'd actually be really cool.
A kid.
But
yeah, like a children's version. Watered down, no cursing.
There are a lot of them now.
There really are. There's a couple of podcasters that do a.
But there's a lot of actual systems now.
Oh yeah, yeah. DM Kids carry that and stuff. Yeah.
Pony Finder.
Okay.
But that's a niche. But yeah, yeah. But they keep writing for it. It's prolific. And there's a ton of PDFs out for it. Oh man.
Is that like a My Little Pony based thing? Oh, okay.
It's like what Bunnies and Burrows wanted to be.
Well, I refuse to play that. But I'll run a small kid base, you know, under 10.
That'd be cool. Yeah, to less raping and pillaging.
Yeah, exactly, and more cakes and candy.
Yes. And since you mentioned Call of Cthulhu, I'll give a random shout out. Never played it, but I bought it prodigiously, and I read the modules, and it's. Chaosium writes fantastic stuff. They did in their heyday.
They really do.
All the stuff. You just love reading the character write-ups.
You don't have to play.
I just read those modules like they were candy. Mm-hmm. I'm so, what stuff?
I was doing that in the late 80s, early 90s.
The Asylum and other stories.
Oh, yeah.
Masks of Nyarlathotep. Shadows of Yogg-Sothoth.
Hulu Now.
I like to keep it in the 20s, but I bought Now and I bought Victorian.
Mm-hmm. Gaslight.
Yeah, I bought Gaslight, but...
I bought Delta Green. You get into Delta Green?
No.
No, man. That's it.
But I've got the PDFs for our Trail of from Pelgrane, so I've got those. And I picked up Cthulhu Tech when it was on sale, PDF, The subsequent stuff's too expensive.
You are correct. It is great reading.
Fantastic reading.
But when did Delta Green come out?
I want to say the 90s, like the mid to late 90s it started. Maybe into the 2000s, I think. Don't quote me on that. I'm not quite sure the origin of it.
Don't quote me.
It would be bad, especially with the alcohol.
Yes.
Horrible. Ready two sheets of wind. Maybe three.
Three and a half.
Three.
Max.
Three and a half. Yeah.
And a half tops.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So who else writes good stuff, game-wise? Old or new? I was a big fan of Iron Crown.
Oh, yeah. Middle Earth.
Their MERP stuff, and their Shadow World stuff was fantastic.
I've got a copy of Middle Earth when Iron Crown first came out. These little 20-siders that came with.
My DM fell in love with the maps. All of his cities were robbed from. I mean, like we played in Tharbad, which was he renamed Tharian. Mm-hmm. That was like our key campaign city. It was just fantastic. They just did fantastic maps.
Oh,
that's awesome. Yes,
yeah,
it's interesting.
Products.
The
good
whole
products.
Yeah, the whole creative endeavor. Like all these fantastic people they bring in, like map designers.
Artists and cartographers. Actually, that was fun to play. We played this live with the Lovecraft E-zine, the Ghostbusters role-playing game.
Huh.
It was entertaining. That was fun.
Now, do you play as? Because I don't know
you
how you
play
as a
I
Ghostbuster.
I played Egon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go for group of four.
So how does a game like that not just evolve into people spouting quotes
to
each other?
Yeah, it was totally there.
Yeah, like I don't know. How do you actually have
a big segue?
You smell that?
Yeah.
These stairs go up.
Where do they go?
They go up.
Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Go get her, Ray.
We're just talking about the game, and it's already it's chaos.
That's right.
Mass hysteria.
So be good for goodness' sake. Whoa.
Somebody's coming.
The night is not complete unless you make a ghost.
True, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but a shout out to Mike Davis and Lovecraft Easy. He's the one that introduced the live Call of Cthulhu games on the site. We played that for a good 2-3 years.
Dennis Malone. Dennis Malone.
Clean this shit up. Brush your teeth. But yeah, getting back to October, and that'll be the second D&D session. Once you guys finish up the Dwarven Forge Tiles of the Dungeon adjacent to the sewers, that will lead you probably back up into the city for a little bit, and then back down into Undermountain for a few more encounters that I have planned. And then you'll leave the city entirely. Mm. So we'll hint. Where are you going?
Well, I was despairing never being able to cast Call Lightning, so that's good.
You'll be able to
that's good news.
Sewers.
My Tempest Cleric will thank you.
You will be able to cast Call Lightning out the water.
Because you do need a 120-foot ceiling, so maybe in the Menza Baranzen, but not too many other areas down south. So.
Yeah, you'll go a little deeper into the Undermountain. That may come into play, and you'll also be outside to bed as well.
I'm really worried because we took some damage before the encounter.
You did.
I took a few hits.
We're new to healing, so we're in the system. So
that is true. Yeah. You get your healing potion.
Yeah. So, how does healing work in this system?
I've got some spells. We've got potions for 2d4 plus 2.
Okay. Right.
So, but that's not much.
And we have our dice.
I've got a few spells, but
so the spells are full actions in 5th edition.
Nah, there is a healing word, which is a bonus action.
Ah.
But it does less healing. So
I see. Okay.
The cure does the most healing, but its range is touch.
And it takes up the most time.
Right. Exactly. That's standard healing word is little healing. It's got a range. It's bonus action. So
that's kind of carried over the healing that they had in 4th edition that you could do, you know, as a, what was it, minor action.
Although I think dwarves could do that as a,
The second one.
That's right.
But like the clerics, most of their healing.
Clerics, yes.
Most of their healing spells.
Yeah, the healing were,
minor actions.
They blew them.
Yeah.
Because they needed them. So.
Definitely.
So they carried over some of that.
I like the healing surge mechanic. That was something
I liked that too. Yeah, that was interesting.
Because you could use their surges. Sometimes you didn't need a surge. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And that was an interesting way to penalize characters when you didn't do level drain anymore. Mm-hmm. You would just take their healing surges,
correct,
unused,
yeah,
and give them a smaller pool until they rested. So that I thought that was dangerous. It didn't seem dangerous on the surface. But when you knew the mechanics of it, you were like,
correct,
oh, crap, I've only got two surges left. Like,
there's no healing in combat.
In the middle of combat, you're like, oh, shit.
Because nobody likes level drain. That's just the worst.
That's sorry. Yeah, that's penalizing characters.
Yeah.
Goddamn race.
It penalizes advancement, so.
Yes.
Staggers advancement. It's terrible.
It's horrible.
You get all the characters out of sync and... Parties level.
What do you mean you can't cast Fireball? We're all 7th level. What the hell are you?
Honestly.
You're still 6. I'm 580.
You're still using Burning Hands? What the hell?
Agonizar Scorcher. I like that spell.
Mouse my new meteor.
Gordon Cannon's Faithful Hound.
Woof, woof.
I cast it. Mornikin's Faithful Hound.
I didn't do nothing. I hit him right on the ass. I actually cast that. I played the game with my brother. I try to have it bite someone to wake them up out of a charm.
So that's a...
It worked a little bit.
Very faithful hound, yeah.
It was a very faithful ass-biting.
The 5A games I've been playing before this, they got a lot of mileage out of spiritual weapon.
Really?
A lot of mileage. Clark always cast it. Sometimes he cast it at a higher slot.
Yeah.
But he was always out there just chipping away.
It's a nice little
tactic.
Spiritual weapon. I don't have my player's handbook, so
that won't serve you.
I brought the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Monster Manual, which
the books that you're not supposed to use.
Well, exactly. I have never looked
both
at
both of you are not supposed to use. Put them away.
Yeah.
Well, now you have the Monster Manual. What's your favorite monster?
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Good question.
My favorite monster. I would say the one that comes to mind is the Phase Spider. And that's mostly because I own the original art from the 2nd edition Monster Manual.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. $50.
Nice.
At the time. Tony Dieter Lizzie was not a big deal at the time. So I was a big fan.
Times as much now.
Yeah.
How about you, James? What's your favorite monster?
It's funny because it's before I really got into Lovecraft. I still, it must have been Fate. I loved Mind Flayers. Mm-hmm. I just loved those tentacle-headed purple bastards. Then I discovered Lovecraft while early while I was playing D&D, and yeah. Fell in love with him. And it's Mind Flayers. That's our boy.
Yeah, I wonder if it's I was always a Mind Flayer bastards. Fan.
And I didn't like the Ulutharid. I don't like six tentacles. I like four tentacles. Thank you very much. So
just the four. The hand.
I don't like.
Squid versus octopus. You get the whole.
Four's
two extra tentacles.
Five and six and above is overkill.
I think you're right, yeah.
See, I'm Mind Flayer, not Aboleth. I'm Duergar, not Darrow. I mean, I'm unprejudiced.
You guys gotta draw a line somewhere. You should play a Mind Flayer character with only three tentacles and there's a story behind that. There you go.
Is there one with a little Band-Aid on it?
Exactly.
With
the SpongeBob SquarePants Band-Aid. That's right.
Yeah, Mind Flayers are cool. What about you? What's your favorite monster to set upon?
That's right. You've got that perspective.
The unknowing and hapless players.
I always enjoyed skeletons as kind of like stormtroopers.
Okay.
Skeletons. And I grew up on Jason the Argonauts. So
oh,
yeah.
Skeletons were teeth. So those teeth. There you go.
They're always my favorite.
That Hydra had beaks, but I'm not going to wear that. So, yeah. Whatever.
Don't
Harryhausen.
He's rolling over his grave.
Yeah, he's not here to defend himself.
I've always enjoyed dragons in general, but I guess I would have to say any undead, and I enjoy doppelgangers just because of the fun you can have with those.
Yeah, you've got a lot of mods on doppelgangers.
Yeah, you really can. Players up with that one.
We had a one-off where one of our players was moving to Hawaii, and the DM let him play in a one-shot. He let him play the doppelganger.
Nice.
And he just just as a parting gift. And he killed us all and said, "See ya." We're like, "Screw you, screw you guys. You're going to Hawaii."
So not only is this guy moving to Hawaii,
but he got to kill us off.
And he got to kill the whole party.
Thanks a lot.
The doppelganger. That's a memoir right there.
It was unnecessary kindness.
Memoirs of a doppelganger.
That's right. I was a teenage doppelganger.
Yeah. That's the new young adult series.
Exactly. There you go. We can come up with everything else.
The Doppelganger Chronicles.
Doppelganger Chronicles Part 1.
Yeah.
You know what was really cool too, like the books that were the mimics and things, like the
ear seekers,
and shit. Yeah,
just to screw with players.
Yeah, the stalactite things,
cloakers,
piercers,
cloakers. Yeah, they were fun.
We always made our DM laugh because the stuff we ran away from. Forget. I mean, all the stuff he threw at us, we fought. But the stuff we ran away from was the stuff that was nuisance stuff. Like, we would run away from Fey encounters. We would run away from Rust monsters. Anything that sucked. Like, it wasn't deadly, but it sucked. We ran like little babies. Like,
this thing is not going to have any good treasure. Right. And it's going to...
It's going to destroy us.
It's going to be a pain in the ass to
fight. Herkimer, no!
Yeah.
I actually missed those two NPCs.
Yeah. But we ran away from a little girl in the woods once, and we it was like because we were in a wilderness.
Yeah.
And there was just a little girl by the stream. Hello. And we looked at each other, and we doubled it, and we ran away. And he's like, "Where are you going?" We're like, "She's in the middle of nowhere. She must be your fae." He's like, "You guys suck. You guys are kidding. You guys
you're ruining my encounter."
We weren't having it. We don't have fae. We don't do fae.
No.
Not doing it.
Next thing you know, someone's getting charmed. Players are all having some kind of...
A little tittering laughter in the bushes.
Yeah.
Well, you guys enjoyed the snowman.
That was orgy. Different.
Yeah.
He was my companion.
Rodney.
He was a Rodney sweet guy. The snowman.
Rodney was cool. And Disney stole that from me. Fuckers.
They did, yeah. The Sorcerer's Tower turned the world
bastard.
To...
That was a good adventure.
Were they tapping into to John's pot? To John's stream, I bet.
They must have been, yeah.
They must have tapped in.
It's possible.
John was playing remotely, and they tapped in. They saw Rodney, and they named him whatever. They named him Olaf.
We're going to do a whole series on this.
The NSA has been listening to my thoughts, and I think that they are in collusion with Disney and the Illuminati.
And the NSA can fuck themselves.
And 2 years ago when I went to Vegas, those were the skeeviest costumes. Were all the like off-white Olafs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they and to their credit, they were burning up, and I'm so the hell with them.
But, yeah, fuck them. That's what they get.
These dingy Olafs all over trying to get
you dirty, like they're not even waiting.
The unlicensed character impersonators.
Keep talking. I'm going to drain the lizard.
Ah!
Oh my god! Yeah. And it didn't post. It didn't post.
So, what do you really think of the adventure, Dan?
Oh my god, it's a disaster.
Oh, that Dwarven Forge stuff.
Oh my god.
Give me graph paper any day. Where's my graph paper? Where's my white wash off board? Well, you can't see it, but it's a nice play space. If you watch the first adventure, you'll know that. And we're very pleased to be here. So.
Yeah.
And we're trying to keep rally on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So
oh, my God.
Doing the best I can. It's a long commute. What can I tell you?
I thought I was up early at 5:45.
That's nothing.
It is nothing.
I'm afraid. I don't even have any children. I just have two cats.
So
I was up at 4.
Is your commute every day?
Every weekday, unfortunately. So.
Goodness.
But we commute with my wife, and we tag team. She drives in the mornings. I drive in the evenings.
Oh, okay.
Seems to work out well.
That's good. So
we work near enough to each other that we have one set of tolls and one tank of gas, and that works. So unfortunately, we consume a tank of gas fairly quickly.
Yeah,
given the length of trip. So, man, we're in tranquil South Jersey, where it was a gorgeous day, beautiful weather, the temperature was just right, like mid to high 70s. Perfect.
My adventure alone.
Oh, all right.
No, oh my god.
Oh, Dwarven Forge is the best.
Well,
they're
okay.
It's lovely.
They had your place.
Yeah.
Finish off the last.
Remember hex paper for the outdoors?
Oh, I love hex paper. That was the stuff. I would spend in the summertime, spend hours in the evening making up mountains and forest regions.
I'm good on that.
They had a map because he was real fog of war. He only mapped within a few hexes of where they'd been. So literally, he had like a map going up the wall and up the ceiling with just like one snaky little trail. There was one river we'd been on. Nice. There was a couple of roads we did. But we didn't know anything about the rest of the continent. It was really, you're not there, you don't know. It was really coming out of the woodwork. Like coming out of the Moorcock's mists.
And I assume that was largely improvised, right? Based on the direction that you guys chose to go.
No, that was the good DM, not the left turn left DM.
Not the the world no. ends here.
but he mapped where you'd been. That was fine. You know, he had a few the campaign started in Hamlet. He picked Hamlet as the village.
Oh yeah.
And the road led to Tharbad, which he turned into Tharion. He had a couple of he used Invisible Overlord for another city. He pirated cities from the Iron Crown stuff mostly, but it was just a nice maybe 5 hex like strip going up the wall and up the ceiling.
Cool. Nice.
That was the world.
So. The world as we know it.
Exactly. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
We used to do that with Undermount. I still have taped together pieces of graph paper, different levels of Undermount. Typically you'd have the caller and the mapper.
That would, I remember that.
Pain in the ass. Yes. So I would be the mapper. I'd say, well, this is what you see, and I would draw out to where they could see. And then players would decide, well, we're going to go here. I'd draw it back out for them.
Start
taping together pieces of graph paper.
Yeah.
But we the DM had to start drawing the maps because we were getting it wrong, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that runs into the passage. Like, no, that's a new room. Like, no, that runs into the passage. Give me your map. This is where you are. Yep. All right, give me back. Okay.
Just gonna do it. Give me.
That's how we did it. We played on graph paper.
Oh yeah.
And with pencils and erasers.
Then afterwards, when they came out with the dry erase maps. Mm-hmm.
It was before where you really needed minis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Grenadier.
That was beautiful, though. Great sculpts. Great sculpts.
Yeah. Those are the days.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But if you didn't prime them, I had some turn to dust. I did not prime them. I was a big collector, but not a painter. So
yeah, I was a painter.
My stuff turned to dust. They had some gorgeous knolls. Oh, I was like, it was a great looking knoll. And the Cthulhu line, they had some fantastic stuff.
Yeah, Ralph Parth and
the Chthonians, they were great. The Mego had a real brain looking thing.
Yep.
Ah,
the
Yithian. Gorgeous.
Alas. Good stuff.
Yeah, now there's lots of kind of small startup companies
doing that now. You know, WizKids doing the plastic minis.
Yeah. Remember Ralph Parth, that they did the series, the same character, three iterations?
Yeah.
Those were cool. So it was like from beginning to end, if you stuck with the same guy, like just everything got more elaborate. That was really cool. Yeah,
it would be like a player character figure.
It would fall along your
level. Low level, mid level, high level. It was like tiers.
Like a homespun rogue mage.
Yeah, the same guy.
Like a mage, a cleric, a thief, and yeah.
That's a great idea.
That was a really cool idea.
That's cool. They can bring it back into those concepts, and I think make some money off.
Well, eventually, when 3D printing gets cheap enough, that'll be the way it goes.
Oh, just download your
You'll just print them yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a replicator.
Yeah.
Tea. Earl Grey. Hot.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Synthol.
Ninth level.
They're not that expensive at all.
No, they're really not.
No. They're $4, right? Maybe a little more. Yeah. Basic color.
It's funny, I was just thinking the other day, I haven't heard a lot of news from the world of 3D printing. Like, it was all over the place. Like,
and it got quiet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost too quiet.
Yeah, they're planning something.
Last I heard was when Howard bought his and Bernadette made him give it back.
What's that?
On Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay.
Howard bought one and it was too expensive. And I think either he's got it back or Raj bought it off him. So.
Okay.
Because Bernadette's got the money, but she won't give it to her honey. So.
God damn it.
Yeah, we're... Okay, motherfucker. But yeah, now they think the laser curing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You get the very high detail.
Yeah.
There was one that was like kickstarted. It was basically, it's an app for your smartphone and a little plastic reservoir that you put resin in, and I think there was just like one mechanism that it would just like raise or lower the level of the liquid resin in the reservoir, and it would use the app on your phone to cure the resin with different
with
the light of the screen to sculpt it. It was like $100.
It's like a 3D cheapo printer. Yeah,
it's a complete bottom of the line but like concept
dice.
Exactly. A girlfriend?
Yeah, you know.
Not yet.
The dream of Anthony Michael Hall and
it's
still
weird science
on the horizon.
Back when Kelly LeBrock was a dream.
So the glow of the candlelight off your face.
I look good in candlelight. Yeah. This is good for my complexion.
Everyone looks good in candlelight.
Yes.
We always played by candlelight.
I appreciate the ambiance. I like it. John doesn't because he's playing via webcam.
Asshole.
I can't see that.
God damn it. Well, so as I'm getting my old age sight, I'm starting to see stars, and I can't see the paper, my paper sheet, which you're insisting on. So
I haven't seen
need a little more of an ambient light source.
I'll have to give you your own personal lamp then.
I can't wait to see if our missing comrade comes in with a paper sheet next time. That will be the trick.
Yes. What did he have? He just wrote it down?
Like he wrote it down on a napkin or something.
This is big. Shit. Yeah, I wanted to go...
Gabe! Because I'll print it for him, but he sent me the file while I'm at work. I'll print it for you. Mm-hmm. Shit. And you'll have no excuse.
I figured he would print it himself. When he asked me, I wasn't home.
I was at the beach. I got spoiled by those fourth edition character generators. I forgot what a pain in the ass it was. And I hadn't really done this, so I didn't really know what the layout should be of the sheet. You know, second edition, I scribbled 8 million characters on a loose leaf, so I knew roughly where how much room to leave for my skills and this and that and the other thing. This, I'm like
the old stat block.
Yeah.
I still have my old basic set green and black D&D sheets.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Oh cool!
Oh, and like the advanced Dungeons and Dragons had the marigold yellow.
And they had the reddish orange NPC sheets, which were half size. Yeah, they were like half sheets.
Uh-huh.
But DM had everybody written on those. Yeah. It was cool.
That was great stuff.
Back when you'd pay for printed paper, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because copying was exorbitant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not too long ago, I broke out my monster cards. Remember the AD&D monster cards? First, second, first through fourth iterations. I have all of them.
That's cool.
That's an interesting article series on and World does once in a while. They take a monster and they run it from first edition through fifth edition.
Okay.
And what the evolution was, how what its powers changed. Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How it reflects.
Or if it's if
system.
It got skipped, you know, some editions didn't do it or whatever. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I guess some would be dropped. Yeah.
The Catablee Pass.
Oh, yeah. About that cow looking thing.
Yeah. With the pig head.
Yeah.
Is that from, is that a Greek mythology kind of guy?
Yeah, probably.
They were always, like, taking random animals and slapping them together. And, yeah. Bizarre and unseen.
The reversed
ways.
Antlion. Yeah.
Jackalope.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Remember the Fiend Folio, the Alamirage?
Oh, yeah.
The rabbit with the unicorn horn? That was. Which brought you the flump. There you go.
Oh, I love it.
Kind of like wispy, kind of.
It was like a frisbee with eye stalks and lower tentacles.
Mm-hmm. It's like a
lawful neutral. It was just living and you just bothered
point.
It.
Yeah.
What were you doing bothering it?
Grick. The Grick and the Grill.
Or the old Germlane.
Germlane.
The little mites.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I just like the Kuotoans too, because they had a deep one vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were going crazy. Yeah. Like, I liked that they had monitors. It was like, because they were snappy.
Like, that was in the module Secret of Saltmarsh. Or the Secret of Saltmarsh?
I thought those were lizard men with a lizard king.
I think it was. Those
Kuotoans. Kuotoans were in D2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were, I think they were playable in some kind of a module. They were like a playable race.
Lost Caverns of Sanshin? Were they in there?
No, that was where Clavdor was.
You're like an encyclopedia, dude.
I know some shit.
You do?
Yeah.
So I didn't play these modules, I read them.
So. I read them all.
I read the good ones, anyway.
Yeah. There you go.
I thought the most irritating was the Genie series. It was the S's. Where it was like Desert Desolation, the Desert
the Pharaoh,
series.
Pharaoh series? Yeah, yeah, I didn't like those either.
Oh.
Hook actually, colors. Like, there was a pyramid one in the basic set.
Oh, the Mesoamerican one?
It was purple. I remember the color was purple. What was it, like, B? Like
well, there something. Was, there was a pyramid encounter in, White Plume Mountain.
No, this was low level. It was for basic set.
That's cool.
Basic set, man.
Yeah, I forget the name of it.
Couldn't tell you. I skipped the whole Remember basic Castle Immortals expert set thing.
Remember Castle Amber?
Yes.
That was good. I like that with the large giant, like the large construct destroying the tower.
Oh, check this out.
It's a good cover.
It was a beautiful cover. And it was a Rosaloff did cover. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The fifth edition monster manual. I just flipped to the Kuotoa.
There's
a great, great little Lovecraft Easter egg in the very first line. Kuotoa are degenerate, fish-like humanoids.
That's right, Innsmouthins. If I ever heard them.
Innsmouthins.
It's great.
Esoteric Order of Dagon.
I think for a module, it was the most realistic depiction of reproduction, because it mentioned they had a melting pond, like where the Kuotoa mated, and then they had the tadpole pond. They had different pools in the structure where they were.
Nice.
Look, there's cool tadpoles. Look.
There you go.
Someone was like a graduate marine biologist or something and
decided to write this adventure.
I'm going to invent this whole species and their life cycle and everything. That's pretty good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was after the G-Series Railroad. What else was it supposed to do? They even had teleportation items from one to the other. It was so easy.
Oh, jeez.
They had like a... a link chain in from Steading to Frost Giant Jarl.
Yeah.
You looped it in a figure eight, you stood in there, and you teleported, and went, bam, you're in Frost Giant Jarl. Oh, that's cool. And then you had a room with a lever, and all of a sudden, you're in Fire Giant King.
Yeah.
And then you saw a river of lava and some derricks and some supplies. You're like, oh, I guess we're going into these areas. Okay.
There you go.
But we can't teleport out, so that's a one-way trip. There you go.
No, they were cool. They were good models.
They were classic. Just...
I think my all-time favorite other than Undermount would have to be the Temple of Elmwood, the Greyhawks. Or...
The Force, the original book after Hamlet. That was beautiful.
That was very well done, yeah. Still have
that. I was like, wait, where they told you about the next town where where they were hiding out?
Nob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nob. That's where Canada's Yade was with her buddies. Hiding out.
Nope. That was good stuff. So what are you looking over there, Mr. Mulhern?
Oh, I'm looking at some
I think it was a big puffball. She was the cause. Like,
yep.
She was like, nobody's going to worship fungus, so what if we design this after elementals? Yes. And then it became, no, it was really Thrizdun who did it, but,
Oh, wait. Do you remember Lost Island of Castanier? That was a good one, too, at the well. Forgot about that. It just, you saying that just sparked that memory. I remember playing that, like 14 or 15.
You know what you guys are talking about, all these things? I've never played... a boxed module adventure.
No.
These weren't boxed. They were all books.
They were books. They were all modules.
They were soft cover books.
Okay. Gotcha. With
I sold a lot of mine, but
They had maps on the inner cover, and you pulled... You know, the cover was detached.
And then
you could fold it out flat. There's the maps. And the paper was, like, double stapled.
Okay.
And that was the module. And they had a few more maps in there. It was really cool.
That's cool.
So, I'll show off the show. I have The Secret of Bone Hill. One of my favorites.
Oh, those two are
He's always trying to show me his secret bone.
Yeah.
Because
it was, like, my only complaint was they had too much magic, but all the characters were really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Assassin's Knot was a fantastic module.
Here, I'll go, you know what?
LaCofka knew what he was doing. He was a good writer.
Oh, he was gruff.
Because there was just too many magic items, but other than that...
Yeah, he was. They were very treasure-heavy.
Yes. Monty Hall, it was.
It's the best.
Wait, the mayor's got a necklace of fireballs? Oh, shit. Are you shitting me?
I steal the mayor's necklace.
And there was a gambler in the inn with a medallion ESP. It was classic. It was like, he wins a lot. Oh, really?
So, that's pretty cool.
Do you have any threes? Yes. Do you have any sixes? Yeah.
Dominating the go fish.
Are you looking through my eyes? What the frack?
I guess living in a world with magic items really compromises a lot of the basic,
basic safeguards in society.
Things that we rely on. Yeah, it's kind of
Never played Assassin's Knot, but it was a great read. It was a time-sensitive adventure where you had to stop the assassin, or he would assassinate somebody every other day. It was like.
That's cool.
It was really cool.
So they put the pressure on the players.
The mayor of one town was in on it. The whole town was like an assassin's guild, essentially, and their allies. And the trick was they wanted to take over the next town.
Very cool. Oh, here we go. So we've got Dungeon Module L1.
Do you have Assassin's Knot?
That
was the second one. That was L2.
You can read it if you want.
And I bought L3 as a PDF.
Really digging the cover art.
Isn't that great?
Got a busty sorceress zapping
the transparent looking zombie hand.
Yeah. The mage with the pelvic bones.
They had a little skeleton spellcaster.
Yeah.
And a little zombie spellcaster.
They did. They're all in here. Yeah. Here's your maps. I colored that in with pencil.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's Rufus and Byrne.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, my brother Rufus.
No. They're the ones in the tower.
That's
that was
right.
The brother.
I forgot about the ranger dude.
This is real cool stuff.
This is so freaking cool.
I know, right?
There's a
Isn't it great? Curate. Look at how simple that is.
Cleric.
And here's the
elegance.
Here's the.
You have five save categories. Remember
the character sheet. Cool. Thief, assassin, and monk, multi-class bard. I don't have the fighter one though, and they have all the explanations on the inside.
The only problem is the thief couldn't do anything at the high level.
Pummeling grappling.
Know, right? He could climb like Spider-Man, but he couldn't pick a lock.
Yep.
He couldn't.
Wait, what the hell's going on?
He couldn't pick a pocket. That was Two's first amazing thing was they converted it. Mm-hmm. You had a percentile pool and you could give it to everybody.
Exactly, yeah.
And then they turned it into proficiencies related with the rest of the system. And your bards weren't dual class, they could cast. That was a big improvement.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff right there in your hand.
This is very cool. This is, what edition is this? AD&D 1?
AD&D first edition.
Yep. What's the date on that?
It's got to be 80 some odd, 79.
Copyright 1980.
1980, I was 10 years old.
Okay, alright, well, so the
you weren't even born yet, were you?
I was not. No, 1981. So, all right. So the trademark on the front page is
81?
15.
Wait, how old are you?
50.
Oh, okay.
Half a century, damn it.
I know, right?
We've got three different decades.
Two score and a decade.
Two, yeah. 46. And Dan, you're what, 31?
33.
33?
Nearly.
So I've been 34. Playing longer than you've been alive.
Yeah. Wow. That's nice. Awesome.
I was playing 3 years when you issued fourth.
I started when I was 13. 12. Remember Dungeon? I still have the original Dungeon board game. And Electronic Dungeons and Dragons.
Uh-huh. So much old shit.
I know, right?
James, does your wife play?
No. She's like, fuck that.
She does not.
Nerd stuff.
Her claim to fame was Echo the Dolphin.
Yeah.
That was her big gaming obsession.
That was a cool game.
Echo the Dolphin.
Was that the Atari?
That was... Nintendo. It was a little better than that. I think it was Nintendo.
No,
Sega? Sega.
That was a big...
I enjoyed the... IP for Sega. The Hedgehog.
Sorry.
That was my first, like... You're working adult purchase.
Yeah.
Like I was working, living in the city, living in Brooklyn, working in Manhattan, and I was like, my little Nintendo, whatever game it was with the yellow screen, mm-hmm. I was like, this is really small and stupid. And I'm like, I went to the electronics store. I'm like, look, there's a Sega. It costs that much. I've got that much. I'm a grown up.
I can buy this.
And I bought it and I took it home.
Played the fuck
and out. I had some late entries to work. That's what I
called out sick.
I was playing till 3 o'clock in the morning, so
yeah.
My brother and I did that with Castlevania. Mm. Oh my god, the value card and Cypher, remember?
Do you remember Star Control?
Yes.
I love that game.
Yeah.
I would play that. I played the campaign games to all hours of the night. I love that game.
I found a cartridge for Star Control 2. I bought it for I don't even know what reason because I didn't have a Genesis. I think I liked the cover or something, or it reminded me of some in-joke, but I think I still have it around somewhere.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy Tactics. That was a game.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that game. I would play it over again.
The basic set right there.
Because I leveled up too high and I missed the ending counter because I just like bulled through it. I like ground and I was a monster. I destroyed every demon I didn't get to the ending. Like I passed the ending. I was like, I can't go back. Because I had one save too far over. It was rotating three saves and all three saves were past the points. What the fuck?
I started that game and I
loved
got
it.
So I can't play.
It was so gritty. I loved it. I normally didn't like playing on a grid, but for some reason, just having those ranges, I just loved it.
Yeah,
it was so cool.
No, I love that.
And leveling the characters.
Oh yeah,
that's what kills me about JRPGs and stuff like that is.
Yeah, keep those safe.
I have to know. I can't make any decision without knowing how it's going to impact. Like my future advancement, or what it's going to lock me out of,
right?
Or oh, is this a suboptimal class, or is there some secret sauce I should be doing to make my guy
the most powerful.
The only cheat I did ever. Was I cheated to find Cloud and to find the sword.
Okay.
Because I wanted to have it. But other than that, oh, that's the gold standard. That's
the Temple of Elemental Evil.
Yep.
Official game adventure.
Remember the Vault of the Drow with those three drow checks and the Mind Flayer leering behind them?
Just staring at it. Oh, my God.
Like,
so risque.
Like, I didn't know my drow were gangsters. Like,
that can take you through, like, first, like...
Oh, these isometric drawings.
No, but there they are.
Yeah.
How much? No. There's your day in Murfles.
Nice.
I have no idea what you guys are saying right now.
Well, you know what? I'll incorporate a lot of this stuff into our campaign, so we'll have some nostalgia.
So you and James will be like winking at each other across the table.
Yeah.
Gabe and Elemental Node.
That's right.
James has the whole adventure memorized.
You don't turn here. You make a left here.
I'm going to do what James says.
Yes.
Lareth the half beautiful.
But yeah.
Even the cathedral in the beginning is just amazing.
Oh, the other Cult of the Reptile God. Remember that one?
Cult of the Reptile
that was
God.
A great
event. Yes, it was.
It was like it was
against the Cult of the Reptile God. Yeah,
it was a spirit naga. Who was, they would kidnap the people and they'd charm them and send them back.
Yep.
So they're all charmed townies.
And like
increasing their cult size by like permanently charming these people.
Cool.
I remember being sick and staying home from school in bed and eating Lipton soup and toast and tea, drinking tea, and then reading Against the Cult of the Reptile.
It just read so well.
Oh, you could read them as like books.
Right.
And you didn't care. Awesome. You wanted to play them. But if you didn't, it was okay.
My DM wasn't going to run them. I read them.
Yeah.
Well, no way.
You read that. Yeah.
I did not. I was not a cheer. I would not read a model he was going to run.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
way. Uh-huh. I wanted to be surprised. Because I don't want to do a walkthrough. That's not me.
No, that's
but
ridiculous.
Yeah. If he wasn't going to run it, I read
You're
it.
You're going to read it, exactly. Sinister Secret of Salt Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
A-series.
Yep.
Cool.
Oh.
The Slave Pits.
Slave Lords.
Series. Yep. Series. Oh, I love those. With the Sundew. Remember they introduced the Sundew? These are just amazing times.
Man, I got to catch up on this stuff.
You do.
This is amazing.
A4, you're imprisoned. You got loincloths.
Yep.
And you're fighting kobolds. Because your mid-level guy is fighting kobolds because you don't have any gear. You're like, with a loincloth and wet sand, you can make a blackjack. Like, are you shitting me? And then, like, the kobold's got a rusty short sword. You're like, yay, rusty short sword! Like, I got a rusty short sword! I'm putting my loincloth back on! I got a rusty short sword!
It's a little sandy, Whee! But I'm good.
Yeah. I got a sharpened shell! I can cut a throat!
Whee!
I'm gonna pick up one kobold and smash
and
him
smack
into the
him
other.
With the other, yes. You're gonna beat one kobold and kill him. Oh, those were. Yeah, I miss those modules. That's why the whole DM's Guild thing is. If some people are like hearkening back to the old modules and how they look,
mm-hmm.
the way they set them up, it's kind of cool. But even down to B1 in Search of the Unknown.
That was,
that was fantastic.
That was good. Caverns of Chaos was fucked just because the demographic was all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It like there were very nearby cavern series, and one was full of goblins. And one was full of hobgoblins. And one was full of orcs. And one was full of gnolls. It's like, no. Like, there was a... The gnolls and the orcs killed everybody else. I mean, like, it just... Demographically, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They all live too close to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not going to be all on each other's doorstep. And,
but they were. Literally. There was like maybe one... There was an anti-cavern and a bunch of cavern doors. Like what?
This is separating these horrible races.
It seems a little bit artificial. It's just...
Imagine.
That was like...
Scenario
was
a little bit...
Of a Gygaxian dungeon.
Yeah.
Right,
see,
we're coming
see
up-
it that way.
We're coming up on an hour and a half now. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about or rap about?
You said rap.
Break it down.
I know, right? D&D stuff. We started at 40 after 8. It's almost 40 to 10.
Wow.
Yeah. No, how about you, Dan?
You have a spider on you.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Is it an orb weaver?
It is a...
Oh.
Something. Get off you.
Kill it.
Off with you.
What is it? Just brush it off. Cool.
Okay.
Oh well. So, yeah, I saved James. Thank you.
Yes. Face spiders were cool because you could harvest their venom was really nasty. Poison your weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember when poison killed?
Yeah, poison. First edition.
There was no alternative.
Yeah.
It was just death poison.
Wait, the centipede just killed me? Oh, budge.
Well, I think that's we pretty much covered a lot today.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Some of it's nonsensical rambling, but we did our best.
No, it's nonsensical rambling. Sometimes people like hearing about that. Well, I like nonsensical rambling.
Legends of Tabletop.
It's gold, Jerry, gold.
That's right. Another successful Legends of Tabletop rambling session.
Yes.
Thank you for tuning in.
Exactly. This is brought to you by, I got nothing.
Code Red.
Thank you.
Yes. Live by the code.
That's right. And not your father's root beer.
There you go.
And Dan's...
And
the
newly published Dungeons and Dragons, The Temple of Elemental Evil, Model T14, number 9147.
When did that come out?
Hitting your bookshelves soon.
If you're into living in the past, actually, yes. Gold, a local favorite, Goldenberg's Peanut Chew.
I love Goldenberg's.
Yes. Check your local Walden Books.
What's a copyright?
Very good. That was a throwback. All right.
Walden Books, B. Dalton.
B. Dalton bookseller.
It was Walden Books, B. Dalton, and in our area it was the Bookend. That's where I got all my David Eddings, Lord of the Rings, all fun shit, Heinlein.
Nice.
He would have Barnes and Noble until much later. Adventures. Yeah. Walden Books.
Barnes and Noble was like so new and fancy.
Remember when Toys R Us had a competition? Child World. We used
and
Child
KB.
World. KB?
Yeah.
KB!
The plastic D&D figures. My brother still has those.
I don't know where my Elkhorn is.
I know, right?
And my War Duke. Yeah.
I have a mini War Duke. I bought a mini War Duke.
Okay.
A little for us to use, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember. You brought him in. It was cool.
I will harass you guys with War Duke. Don't worry. I would like to actually. Would you guys like to be run through Temple of Elemental Evil? I mean, would you like to be run through that? No,
that's a killer, man. I've read it.
We'll wait to your higher level.
Well, it's a gradual.
Well, if you guys would like to start it at the beginning, and I mean later on, yeah, might be good to do. This is a holy shit.
I'm always up for murdering monsters.
I know, right? What the hell?
Doesn't give a level spread.
Copyright is 1985.
Well, because it was Hamlet, the original Village of Hamlet was an ancient module. Correct. It was all by itself.
It was.
They never did the follow-up until they did the reprint.
Correct.
Which included, re-included Hamlet and the
and
next
Nold,
three.
And Nold, yeah.
Right. And then went crazy from there.
The Church of St. Cuthbert.
But it was just so cool to see what they had intended. I was like...
Correct.
Because I'd had Hamlet for years, and then, what the hell? Where are they going with this?
Village of Hamlet, yeah. You know? With the zombies on the front, throwing the one character.
The Moat House.
Oh, I love the Moat House. The frogs. And even the PC game, that's where you started with the frog. That was a pain in the ass. It was like very turn-based, very slow. Okay, I guess we'll wrap it up here. Thank you,
gentlemen,
for coming out and jamming.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. What do you think about doing this on a regular basis?
Don't see why not.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get a couple more voices in here, too.
Yeah, right. We'll get Gabe when his joints start going.
Yeah.
And maybe John as well.
Maybe he has Lyme disease.
That's what you thought.
That's what we were talking about.
Because he likes going into the woods.
Yeah.
He likes going into the woods and searching for D&D monsters.
Yeah,
he's
in
the Blair Witch Project.
If you're the joint pain.
I'd like to apologize for things that happened here. I'm so scared. What is that?
Oh, my God. It was only good if you were in the theater day one.
Exactly, yeah.
After that,
it was good. Aren't they doing a remake?
Yes,
so, yeah.
It's out now.
Is it out now? Okay. I think I'll skip that one. Ha! No need to do a remake. Just watch the first one, fuckers. Anyway. Alright, so we have Mr. Mulhern signing off.
Have a good evening, everybody. Or
James,
whatever it may be.
I know, and James Carlson.
Good evening, Todd.
Word. And this is Vince LaRosa. The one legend from Legends of Tabletop, minus John Haremza II. And we will be talking to you shortly. Sign up.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network.
For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.